Time to talk NBA with Keith Smith from Spot Rack and the Front Office Show. And on Twitter X at Keith Smith NBA. Here's Keith Smith talking basketball with Bryant and Brett.
Keith Smith joins us like he does at this time every single Thursday afternoon to talk the NBA from SpotTrack and the Front Office Show. He joins us now. Keith, thanks so much for joining us. The Boston Celtics, they punched their ticket to the next round of the playoffs, finishing off the Heat last night in dominant fashion. What were your takeaways for the Boston Celtics in this round one win?
Yeah, you said it. They dominated. They had the one loss, which they get taken out of their game. Miami seemed to get a ton of open threes and then baited Boston into not playing their game and taking a lot of contested twos and tougher layups inside instead of taking the jump shots that the Celtics really generally play for. But other than that, Boston blew them out in every game. None of the other games were close, and they absolutely rolled through a very weakened and injured Heat team, despite the fact that they were without Kristaps Porzingis. So even without Porzingis for Game 5, it went about as expected in the series, and now it's on to Round 2, where, again, even without Porzingis, they're going to be expected to beat either Cleveland or Orlando, no matter who it is.
Cleveland or Indiana, right?
No, Cleveland or Orlando.
Cleveland or Orlando,
Indiana,
that's right. That's right.
Milwaukee, yeah.
That's right. Keith, I said earlier, I don't think Boston minded losing one. And Miami was never going to win that series. But if they'd taken two, it might have set off some alarm bells. The one, even though it was on the parquet, that wasn't that disconcerting, was it?
It depends on who you talk to. First off, some Celtics fans, it was the end of the world. the other day. You know, but they've been that way all year. I think Jason Tatum put it best back in, I think it was like January, where he said, "We don't lose very often. So when we do, it's a chance for people to, you know, get off all their takes and all their thoughts about how we're not going to get it done and all those things." And that was just another example. And, you know, that's obviously quieted down quite a bit here, but it's already starting a little where it's all, you know, Cleveland and Orlando are both very big teams. And if they don't have Porzingis, are they going to be able to match up inside and all those the things that come with that? So it's just, you know, I tend to think, you know, Boston sports fans are pretty spoiled, and they are anything short of a title isn't enough for them. But I think within the team, I think losing a game is almost not the worst thing, because it wakes you up a little bit and reminds you, hey, you're not going to sleepwalk your way into the East Finals or even into the second round. You're going to have to work to get this done. And I think Joe Mazzulla and staff did a good job getting the Celtics refocused and went into Miami, you know, beat them badly twice, and then back home really hammered the Heat in this one, Game 5. And that I think part of that comes out of having lost that one game.
Keith, you know the heartbeat of that Boston sports fan oh so well. So take me inside. I know you're based in Orlando, and you probably don't dip into it every day, but you get feedback from friends, and you have a good pulse for things. Right now, with the Celtics doing what they're doing, the Boston Bruins in the Stanley Cup playoffs, with the Red Sox off to a surprising, really good start. Patriots around draft time, new coach, changing the guard there. Divvy up the sports talk radio pie for me in Boston, say, tomorrow morning. What will it mostly be dominated by in kind of percentages for those four?
Yeah, there won't be a lot of Celtics, just because they tend to have to be playing really, really well for them to fully pull folks over. And the challenge is that they're not going to play for, you know, at the very most till Friday, until Sunday, and maybe even till Tuesday, you know, so that's a little bit of the challenge there. I think they're going to kind of, we'll wait and see, you know, what that looks like, you know, before anybody gets, you know, too fired up on Celtics talk, and we'll see what the Bruins do in their next game. But yeah, so it'll probably be, it's always a lot of Red Sox at this time of year, no matter what. And then the Patriots have kind of become the team in the region. But what will happen here is the draft will get a full week of plus behind us, and then people will start to really focus on the Celtics and the Bruins a little bit, and then, you know, we'll see where it goes. But yeah, it's a place where, you know, they make time for whoever forces them to make time for. That's the best way I can put it, especially at this time of year where they're kind of all in action, whether on or off the floor.
Which one of the four is the bar unapproachably too high for. It's just insane, the expectations around them.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think right now it's the Celtics. I think people have very much, there's a lot of people who are not out as being fans of the Red Sox, but just out on the Red Sox for the time being. That they really going back to trading Mookie Betts. A lot of people were, you know, I'm not doing this. You know, I'm not doing this. They don't want to win. They only care about making money. And there's been a lot of upsetness. And I think the Patriots fans have really kind of turned their mindset to, all right, we're in a rebuild now. This is not the same team that is going to dominate and roll all the way through out of where they were. So you've got that. And then I think the last portion here is the Bruins. And the challenge with hockey is, I think Boston fans know just as well as a lot of, you know, fan bases, is a lot of it runs into, you run into a hot goalie, your season might end early. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to them a year ago when they you know, had this
first round
setting year. Yeah, absolutely. And people were, you know, like, hey, I'm just not going to fully buy in on that. With the Celtics, it is, there is a belief within the fan base and even within the more casual fans of, hey, if this team doesn't win a championship, this is a failure of a season. Like, everything has built to this. They better win one. Otherwise, you know, what was the point of all of that?
Yeah. Well, Brett mentioned you're in Orlando. Last week when we talked to you, the Magic were down 2-0 against the Cavaliers, and it was really the Cavaliers who had dominated those first two games at home. But since then, Orlando has won 2, Cleveland has won 1 more, setting up for a Game 6 where the Cavs lead 3-2. What have you made of this series and how the Magic have played? Because even in that loss, it was a really good, fun game, came down to the final minutes, and the Cavs won by 1. What have you made of the Magic and their efforts these last couple of games?
Yeah, the two home games, really it was towards the latter part of Game 2 in Cleveland. But then in the two home games, they really figured out, we just need to be more physical. We need to go back to what the Knicks did to this Cavs team a year ago, which was get extremely physical with them on defense and then hit the boards on offense and, you know, push, you know, shove, you know, bang bodies, do everything you got to do to make that happen. And that's what they did in the two home games, and really kind of overwhelmed the Cavs and blew them out. Then in Cleveland for Game 5, when it shifted back there, you had a Magic team that they still did that, but Cleveland countered without Jared Allen by going extremely small around Evan Mobley. They went with basically played wings and guards around Evan Mobley and said, yeah, we're going to spread you out. And you know, if you want to hit us, you're going to have to catch us. That's going to be the way we're going to play. And then they did a lot of you know, different things as far as, hey, we're going to funnel everything to Mobley as the primary big. We're going to really work to, you know, chase these guys and make life difficult. And then they gang rebounded, which did a nice job against Orlando. So Cleveland made that adjustment. We'll see if Jared Allen's back. I think Orlando does. They're like most teams that get that big lift from the home crowd. I think they'll force the Game 7, and then from there, who knows? Anything can happen in a Game 7.
No, that'll be a ton of fun. We've got two games tonight, and kind of weird scheduling with TNT, with that first game starting a little early at 5:30 Central Time, and then that second game in Philadelphia, an 8 p.m. Central start, so 9 o'clock start time in Philadelphia for that one is going to be really, really late. But in that first game, I'm curious, we've seen the reports today and the rumors about if Dame and Giannis will be able to take the court for the Bucks later tonight. What is your feel on that? I just saw a report from Jamal Collier, who works at ESPN, that says Doc Rivers said both Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo are still game-time decisions. He said, quote, Giannis is more doubtful than Damian, but both had great workouts today. What is your feel on them playing tonight, and how much will that change how tonight's game goes?
Yeah, my guess is we're not going to see Giannis. I think that is Doc. Kind of, that's a little bit of gamesmanship there. Of hey, let's just kind of put this out there that, you know, Amy might still play, but maybe Damian Lillard gives it a chance. And I think if you're the Indiana Pacers, you have to be kicking yourself a little bit. You had this 3-1. Yeah, you were on the road in Milwaukee, but you had a chance without Lillard, without Giannis, to close out the Bucks and finish this off. And they came out and played extremely flat. That was just a game. They didn't look very interested in playing much defense. Their offense was, you know, just wasn't flying up and down the floor the way they usually do. Just nothing was crisp. Nothing was very good. So that turned into now you're having to play this extra game. Now you're at home, so you hope you can go. And if Damian Lillard's going to play, the hope is that he's really actually good to go, because otherwise I'm not sure the Bucks should be messing around with a guy with an Achilles injury. Because
right.
if anything goes with your Achilles now, your next season is over too. Yeah, that's a year-long injury. You're not going to be back. So that's a challenge as well. So it's a grass ball where let's see what happens here over the next little bit with these guys. But I think the Pacers have a pretty good chance, even if Lillard plays, to still take out the Bucks. And even if Giannis plays, if he's not, Giannis the dominant MVP, best player in the league type player, then I think there's a chance that they'll win that one too.
Keith, of the teams that have been eliminated, Phoenix, Lakers, Miami, and New Orleans, Who's the team that's really in a stew over it, that's burning red hot of our season's over? How'd this happen to us in the first round? Who's the best team that's been eliminated?
Yeah, I think the two that are probably wondering what happened are Phoenix and the Lakers a little bit. I think it's probably mostly Phoenix.
I can answer it. They play in the West.
Yeah, for Phoenix, they had handled Minnesota easy in the regular season. So they should have had a much better showing than they did. And in the Timberwolves, that was a pretty easy victory for them, all things considered. In that series, there were a couple games that got a little tight. They mostly handled their business with relative ease. So that's kind of problem number one, I think, there. And then I think for the Lakers, you can at least look at it and say, all right, well, we ran into Denver again. We mm-hmm. we ran into arguably the best team in the league and the defending champs. And, of course, like that was going to be hard. Miami's going to look at it and say, hey, we played the best team in the regular season in the Celtics, and we didn't have a bunch of our guys. And as the series went along, we lost more guys. So for them, I don't think they're going to worry about it. I think New Orleans is looking at it and say, well, Zion. We played the number one seed. We didn't have Zion. That's kind of how it went. But for Phoenix, you got to be looking at it and saying, man, where do we go? And then the hard thing for Phoenix is that's a team that's going to have a $200 million payroll next year. And you're going to be saying, all right, where are we going with this? Because it's not easy to make changes and additions and all that stuff. So it's probably going to be a team that looks pretty similar. And is that going to be good enough? I don't know. I have a real question.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious, when it comes to the Lakers, what does this offseason look like for them? I mean, there's now a lot of rumors out there of what happens with Darvin Ham. I saw a report earlier today, I think, from The Athletic that said he'll likely be fired by the end of the week. You've got D'Angelo Russell, who's got a player option this offseason. I think all signs point to LeBron being back next year, but he has a player option as well. What does this offseason look like for the Lakers?
Yeah, I think, the Darvin Ham stuff, it is a little odd that it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
Generally in the NBA, it's usually within a day or two of the season ending. But I think they're just trying to cover all their bases. And one of the things they may be looking at is, hey, let's make sure whoever we wants to be here and, get things really covered that way. So that there may be a lot of, if this, then that kind of discussions happening for the Lakers. As for LeBron, people are, because it's LeBron and it's the Lakers, it's got to be a story that he's saying, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. But right. In reality, he's doing what he's always done. He's mm-hmm. controlling the process as best he can, and he's going to put that as a leverage piece on the Lakers to, I'm not going to say he's going to demand a certain person as coach or certain transactions happen, but he's going to basically say, hey, if we're not doing X, Y, and Z, I don't know if I'm, maybe I will go play somewhere else. Nobody I have talked to really expects that. I think LeBron has made it very clear that a lot of what he's doing now is about family.
Mm-hmm.
And his family, they've made their life in L.A. This is, where his kids are in school, they're growing up and all that. So I think he's now at the point where, I'm going to just kind of probably come back here. But, they've got a lot of work to do. Again, much like Phoenix, very expensive team, very top-heavy team, but just not good enough. Not good enough to compete with the best teams in the West. And the other thing, for both of those teams, they had pretty good health this year. I know a bunch of Lakers people, Magic Johnson included, like to talk about injuries. You had injuries to back up. That's the part where you kind of lose me. LeBron and AD were mostly healthy all season long, and I don't know that you can count on that moving forward at their age and with their track record of health.
Keith, we could tell Magic Johnson all about injury in Memphis.
Yeah.
The Lakers did not have injuries compared to us. Keith, where would be a spot for LeBron James to go to be their opening night next year for the 24-25 season that right now nobody could see it coming, for him to end up a member of what team?
Oh, geez. It's so hard because they have to be a team that can win. He's clearly not going to go somewhere where they can't win. It also can't be a team that is, you know, very, very expensive team, because it's too difficult to make that happen, with all the CBA rules, especially for the most expensive teams. So I struggle, honestly, to find, like, a real place because there's, I've had some people say, you know, well, what if you wanted to go to the Clippers? Well, there's no realistic path to that because LeBron's not going to wake up and say, you know what, I'm going to sign for the minimum with whoever. Like,
I don't blame you.
That's not going to be a thing. So I think there's a world where the Warriors, if they shed Chris Paul's salary and then they cut Klay Thompson's salary, you know, basically in half or more, they could maybe make a move. Reportedly, there was at least some level of discussion at the trade deadline of, hey, what could this look like? So that I think would be one where it'd be like, whoa, this actually did happen. But anywhere else it starts to get to be, is he really going to go there? Because I don't know how good they'd be, or it's just too difficult for the team to pull off.
Bryant and I bounced this around the other day, and we were kind of throwing out places, and we were mostly, we would sober up and get to where mostly you are. What about Dallas?
Yeah, the challenge for Dallas is they're such an expensive team already.
Gotcha.
And you start bringing in LeBron, it's going to have to be either he opts in for the next year and then they trade for him on that deal, or you get him through a sign-in trade. And the challenge with that is, yeah, how do you put that together? Because they're very expensive, but their big salaries belong to guys that they're going to need.
Right.
You know, because he's not going to be happy to go there if he's not playing with Luka and Kyrie. Then it becomes, all right, well, what was the point of this? You know, why did we make this move? So, I mean, not saying that it's the NBA. There's very little I would rule out completely and, you know, say there's no chance it'll happen. But there's a lot of stuff with LeBron that points to some things, even if he wants to be somewhere else, the market may dictate it's just not really possible.
Sure. Talking to Keith Smith, he joins us every Thursday to talk the NBA from SpotTrack and the Front Office Show. Speaking of the Mavericks, they made it look easy last night on the road, a 123-93 win over the Clippers. It's been such a fun series to watch. I mean, Brett and I yesterday were kind of sitting there going, how in the world are the Dallas Mavericks a 3.5-point favorite on the road in L.A. with how close this series has been? And then we look foolish because the Mavericks made it look easy. What have been kind of your takeaways? What have been your observations from how this series has played out?
The Clippers need to play almost perfectly without Kawhi Leonard to win. And then they need the Mavs to play not so great to have a real chance. And you know, other than that, if Dallas plays well and the Clippers don't still play perfectly, they're going to struggle because they just don't have the guys to keep up with Luka and Kyrie. And then when you've got Maxi Kleba hitting shots and you've got Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively feels like getting a dunk every, you know, third play at the rim, and P.J. Washington and Derek Jones Jr. giving them really good minutes, it just gets really, really hard for the Clippers to keep up. They need more out of Paul George. Paul George is in such a weird spot because this guy is a star in the league, and there's all this talk of, you know, is he going to be the one big free agent to change teams? Well, I need you to be better than this. You need to come out, and you need to be putting up 25, 30 points a night. We cannot be having games where you take 12 shots and make only four of them. You've got to get out there and really lead your team, because right now, all too often, it's James Harden doing a whole lot of everything, and then if he's not getting it done, it falls to Russell Westbrook trying to make stuff happen while Paul George is kind of content to just be a bit of a passive bystander along the side. So they need him to come out in a big, big way. We've already seen him do it, so I wouldn't rule out that they win and force a game seven, but we're going to see. It's going to be a tough one.
Keith, I love how level-headed, just a facts-jacked person that you are, and I like your worldview of things, so I want your opinion on this. I interrupted you earlier about, I can tell you why I said because they play in the West, why Phoenix and the Lakers may be kind of wondering, how are we at home? And I said, because they play in the West. I won't even entertain the notion of us in this part of the world making too much of the SEC in football, but do we make too much of being in the West in the NBA?
I think when it comes to the overall depth of the conference, it's totally fair. I think when it gets to, you know, you start hearing a lot of, well, you know, every team in the West, you know, people start talking like the Portland Trailblazers would be a playoff team in the East, and it's like, now we've gone too far. Or, you know, the Houston Rockets would have been the 2 seed in the East. It's like, you know, I think the very best teams are the best teams, and I think the East teams went through some stuff this year. You had teams, you know, Milwaukee never quite gelled. New York had a bunch of injuries. Miami was very banged up and injured. Philly didn't have Joel Embiid, and the Western Conference teams, for the most part, a lot of their guys, you know, and I'm not making a dig, I promise, at y'all there in Memphis, but most of the West teams stayed pretty healthy, which is part of the reason why the Grizzlies had the season they had, because nobody else in the conference really had a season like that, where the wheels came off and all these guys were hurt, and they did, and that's what happens when you're in a good conference. So, yeah, I think we get a little too crazy, because there's all these people who said, well, Boston's going to sleepwalk, but then they're going to get to the finals and get drilled because they'd be the fourth best team in the Western Conference. It's like, that's just, you know, that's where it gets a little too into, all right, come on, we might as well be standing up and chanting SEC, SEC.
That sounds a little bit like some of the SEC dialogue, doesn't it?
Happens. Yeah, it does.
But, Brian, and Keith, I keep up with this for every sport. In the 21st century, 11 different NBA teams have been crowned with champions and holding the Larry O'Brien Trophy. I think it would shock people to know, of the 11, 6 from the East, 5 from the West.
Yeah, I do think people don't fully recognize that. And there's this thought that, you know, well, it's been this way for, you know, 40 years. And my thing is, I'm like, it was, there were a lot of years in the West where the Lakers, it was almost like if they didn't make the finals, the season was a failure because they didn't have any competition. You know, they should have rolled through the Western Conference for years and years until kind of the Trailblazers became what they became with Clyde Drexler and, you know, crew that could kind of challenge them a little bit towards the end of, you know, the Magic Johnson era before he was forced to retire. And that was the first time they started getting really challenged as they kind of aged out of being a truly great team. But throughout the 80s, when I was a kid, it was like, man, the Celtics are having a battle, all these teams. And then, you know, then you throw in this Jordan kid who can win games by himself that you got to try to beat. It was, you know, it was going to be really tough to get through the East. And then it was in the West. It was like the Lakers get tripped up by the Rockets, who were like barely a 500 team. Like, what are we doing? And that flipped, you know, but for most of the 90s, the East was the power. You had Michael Jordan and you had the Knicks and you had a bunch of good teams there. And then it started to turn and it'll turn back eventually. The biggest thing I think that happened here, what happened? So Memphis is a perfect example. They're a very good team that had an extremely unfortunate season. Mm-hmm. But what that results in is a good high draft pick. They're going to get a good player.
That's right.
You know, and then if you do that in the right year, you could get a great franchise altering player. And then the next thing you know, good team adds great player. And now they're back to being a great team. And it's like one team cycles through that every couple years in the Western Conference, where it is, as they kind of fall down, they get the great player and then they're right back up along with the ones who are kind of more of the mainstays and traditional powers. And that's where in the East, they haven't had that same thing because you don't have that one or two teams that gets pushed down to a 20-win season or so that ends up with a really high pick because a bunch of their teams end up winning 25, 30 games, even at the bottom of the conference, because the bottom of the conference is a lot more balanced.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a fun weekend to see how this first round plays out and see what some of these second round matchups look like. But as always, Keith, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll do it again next week.
Hey, with the breaking news right here at the end, Damian Lillard will play tonight.
Oh, wow.
For Chris Haynes of TNT. So we are going to see Damian Lillard make his return. Nothing on Giannis. That tells me he's probably not going to play, but at least the Bucks will have Damian Lillard. That should be a fun one here in about in a little over an hour.
That's right. Wow. Well, that's going to make it really interesting. Thanks, Keith. We'll do it next week.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Keith.
Keith Smith with us every week, and with that breaking news of Damian Lillard good to go tonight, and he's right in 1 hour.
Yeah, I mean, again, the early...
Get that app handy, Brian.
I mean, man, this is like the... And I understand why they're doing it today because of that second game and how late they're going to have to play it and being on the East Coast.
We need more of it.
But, man, they're using this Bucks and Pacers series almost like a test series of like, what if we start this early starts? We got a 4 o'clock here. We got a 5:30 there. I mean, good Lord.
It really is. This next weekend, not this weekend, but next Sunday will be Mother's Day. This weekend, you still need to treat mom and all the special people in your life to something great. And I know what it is for any holiday, for any occasion. It's that gift card from GouldSalonSpa.com. Go online, GouldSalonSpa.com, and there you're shopping. It's done. It's taken care of. It's that easy, and it's perfect for any holiday, but it's perfect for every someone in our lives that we want to say, I love you too, and treat them special. The best holiday gift for any season, that Gould's gift card, the best spa packages, salon products, those gift cards are the hit for any location, good anywhere in our area. And there's a location, I promise you, very, very close to you, wherever you are in our listening area, from downtown to out in Collierville, all points in between, part of the renaissance, the resurgence of Overton Square, is the Gould Salon and Spa there. They've been here since 1932, over 92 years of making everybody feel so very special. Family operation, Mr. Sam Gould, he had a dream to provide his clientele with a truly professional and unique fashion experience, and it's been realized with the family operation. Sons, grandsons, granddaughters, valuable associates, dear friends and customers through all the years, from a small hair salon to today's juggernaut, upscale ambiance, chic style that once was considered a Hollywood luxury. We have it here in so many ways, in so many locations, and easy to get to. Go to GouldSalonSpa.com. Get that gift card for any holiday, but especially for the next one coming up for mom. 92 years of distinction with all those associates making our area feel so good. It is the best holiday gift for any season. That Gould's gift card. Go to GouldSalonSpa.com and purchase right now.
Let's go ahead and get to a break, and when we come back, we'll talk baseball.
Add a little fun to your lunch break. Join Johnny Radio for Sports 56 Happy Hour from 11 to 1 every weekday on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Welcome back in to Sports Time. Bryant and Brett with you, and it's a Thursday, so mainly a travel day for Major League Baseball, but we've had a lot of finals in the books. Some teams going this afternoon. It's been some pretty fun games today. We only have one game that has not started today. That's going to start later tonight, 7 o'clock, Guardians and Astros. But a lot of finals already. Mets and Cubs go to extra innings, and the Mets get a 7-6 win at home in 11 innings. And Brett, don't look now, but the Marlins have won back-to-back games with a 10-inning win for them earlier today against the Rockies.
Marlins have to be thinking, wish we could play the Rockies a lot more.
Man, you play the Rockies all season and you'd have a pretty good record.
Start to get well. You're right about the schedule today. Very light schedule in general, and almost nothing tonight. Only one game tonight. So it'd be a mostly NBA night tonight for us, I think. We'll keep an eye on Guardians and Astros tonight, though.
Sure.
With the Cleveland Guardians, with the going into today, the best record in the American League.
Crazy. I mean, 20-10 on the season. They've just played really, really well. And I mean, I thought they'd be a good team, but I don't know if I thought that they would be this dominant through the first month of the year. And they've played well. On the other side, the Astros have not played well to start the
season. They're 10-20.
10-20 on the year. And
new manager, a lot of new.
Yeah, a lot of new there, and a lot of injuries to some pitching to start the season that really hurt them. But, yeah, that should be a fun game later tonight.
That was a fun game between the Mets and the Cubs. Walk off with how we do extra innings. I'm not going to let extra innings get me up too upset.
No. How could you? I mean, you've
how could I? I'd be suspended on May 2nd.
You would. Now, did you see in that Cubs game, I don't remember who it was, but one of the Cubs player running to second, it's going to be a bang-bang play at second. He takes his helmet off while he's sliding, and he slides past the bag, but he holds his helmet on the bag, and he's safe. And a lot of people have been asking, does a helmet count as being part of your body?
As the appendage?
And yes.
It does, yeah.
And touching, and sure enough, it does. And,
no different than the cooking mat.
That's a great point, but that's been the big debate on Twitter today. Should he have been out? And is that really fair that he's using his helmet? I loved it. I thought it was great, but that was interesting.
Just like a hot shot back to the pitcher,
sure.
He has the kick save. Somebody catch it in there, it's out.
Sure, yeah. Or like my favorite when the ball gets stuck in the glove and they take their glove off and toss it to the first baseman.
Right.
They have to catch the entire glove.
Ring him up.
That's right. So that was interesting earlier today. But yeah, some really good games today. And I also saw this earlier today. I made sure to save it so I could bring it to the table today. The Arizona Diamondbacks, we talked about them the other day with the B situation going on there that delayed that game. This is what the Arizona Diamondbacks posted earlier today. You can believe your eyes. Buy one, get two free B today for games this weekend using code BGUY. So a little sale after the B fiasco.
Brian, it's proof again, and I do. I admire all the people, mm-hmm. and it. I'm not talking about it being a sweatshop or anything.
Sure.
But marketing departments, mm-hmm. game operations,
yes.
people, they really do. They work hard year-round to kind of have the good, fun vibe. But this is proof again, whether it was against the Clippers and whoop that trick, or almost anything is born organically, mm-hmm. naturally in the building. A lot of times at playoff time, sure wasn't playoff time when the bees hit in Phoenix at Chase Field. But you rally around it like mm-hmm. the Cardinals did the goofy rally squirrel that year. Whatever it takes, but usually the best marketing thing comes not from that off-season cram session that everybody's trying to come up with. It falls into your lap.
That's right. And Arizona got a good one and have certainly used it in their advantage with this little promotion. I think it's awesome. I also saw on Topps Trading Cards has the B guy. Unfortunately, I do not know the B guy's name, so we'll just refer to him as B guy.
That's it.
But you can get a B guy trading card that has
in his suit,
picture and everything. I think they even have signed cards. So, I mean, they're doing.
I'm telling you,
for him.
Neil Armstrong didn't walk on the moon with more elaborate suit on than that.
Oh man, I mean, it's incredible. The whole. Don't want to get stung now, Brad. I mean, you're.
I don't want to get stung either.
No.
Are you a honey eater?
Oh no, I don't like honey. I don't.
You don't?
Well,
I do.
I like the taste of honey. I just don't.
A little goes a long way.
Yeah, I don't like the thickness.
Teaspoon.
See, my mother found probably 6 or 7 years ago that I guess if you eat local honey, it helps with allergies. And so she will eat a spoonful of honey every day during allergy season, and I can't stand it. I mean, I start gagging. I cannot. It's way too thick for me.
It's very busy.
Yes.
But I do the same thing, and I have more fall allergies than spring.
Sure, man. I believe me. I need to get some honey, and I end up getting to this point of the year, and I just got to suck it up and get some honey because my allergies get really bad. But yeah, I'm not a big honey guy.
I don't know if I'd want to be the beehive guy.
No, but I've seen some beekeepers that will go into it with no protection on. They'll just go in and
really,
they I guess know what they're doing, and as long as
shoot the rapids.
Yeah, I mean, I guess as long as they're careful or whatever, then
commando of beekeeping.
Good. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't do it.
No, wouldn't be
my choice. But
again, whatever in anything, whatever padding equipment they offer, I'm gonna wear.
Uh-huh. Yes. I think in all walks of life, whatever it is, if they say you need this, got it.
The hockey guys that would play without a mask?
Crazy. I mean, hey, good for them, I guess.
I mean, you're just begging to have a Jell-O diet the rest of your life.
Yes, take one right to the face.
There won't be any teeth. with, like that.
No, no, there will not. And we talked about it the other day, being a dentist for a hockey team seems like a
tough job.
Tough job to
Very
do.
Busy.
A lot of teeth coming out, but yeah, no, I think a lot of people were happy when they brought the mask into hockey for goalies.
Yankees and Orioles they had games similar to how Braves Mariners played early in the week. Really good ball being played, high end baseball. All those teams could be around mid to late October.
Sure. Oh no, absolutely. And you mentioned that
could sort out in the American League. Yankees, Orioles, Mariners in the mix.
Yeah. No. Cleveland. It really. Yeah, you're right. And I mean this Yankees and Orioles series, like you mentioned, I mean, it almost played out exactly like the Braves and Mariners series played out. I mean, three really, really close games. And then that last one, Baltimore kind of ran away with it. In Atlanta and Seattle, it was only a three-game series. But the first two games were really close, came down to the wire. And then the third game, Atlanta kind of ran away with it. But I think four teams right there that I think all four of them will be making noise late in the season and certainly come postseason.
Because I don't have mine close to me, I don't think. I really don't know where my – they're somewhere. I have my preseason baseball picks. We won't go to them until after Memorial Day. I'm big on the summertime holidays is kind of the quarter pole Memorial Day, halfway point 4th of July, three-quarter pole Labor Day, and then the one that really matters, the one the day after the season ends. We'll look at our baseball picks. When should we do our next version? We did it way, way, way too early on college football playoff, and we were all over the place because that's when we thought – the Mountain West had the automatic spot. Well, they did, and now they don't.
Yeah.
When should we do our next round of way too early, but getting a little bit later, college football predictions for the playoffs?
I would think middle or towards the end of this month, I would think.
I would, too. Yeah. I would think maybe last Friday of this month. That
kinda
might
like
be
a
good 5 o'clock topic.
Post-spring transfer portal.
Washington spring game is tomorrow night.
Really?
I like a later spring game.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very late
Especially
spring
last
game.
Weekend, those dates.
Oh, yeah, those I like those a lot. But, man, May 2nd, holy cow, that's a really late one. As I'm sure a lot of excitement in Washington, a lot of new at Washington with new head coach,
a lot
new
of
quarterback, new receivers.
I think he's one of the up-and-comers.
Yeah, yeah, and, I mean, I think should be a lot of excitement with what he could do, Jed Fish, and what that team now, of course, another new going into a new conference. I mean, they'll be in the Big Ten next year, so that's interesting. But I think should be some excitement around Washington.
While we got a minute and a half, we hadn't brought it up all week. A little bit of college football. The Deion Sanders, Shedeur Sanders shots at the player going out. Look to me, tough toenails.
Yeah,
it's life in the big city now,
and
everywhere. Everywhere we a little bit disparage the ones on the way out and make the ones on the way in sound like they're all Jerry Rice or Deion Sanders. But, that player, he felt like he could talk.
Sure.
Well, they can talk back.
Sure. Yeah, no. And, I've seen a lot of people. I know John came in yesterday and wanted to talk about the story, and he had been seeing a lot of reaction to it on social media, and I think a lot of people were kind of seeing the story and seeing some of the quotes that came out, which there were a couple quotes in there that I think you could take one way, but most of the quotes in that story were more down the line. I understand what he had to do, what he has to do. He's coming in. He doesn't know me from anybody. He had to make a decision. And of course, those comments aren't going to be the ones that go crazy on social media. It's going to be the ones of he treated us like furniture and just got rid of us. I thought it was a really good story, a really fascinating story, but kind of all of this extra stuff, I'm not a huge fan of it. I wish it would kind of go away, but it's certainly building
up.
It is where we are. It's certainly building up for going to be a lot of eyes on – there's already going to be a lot of eyes on Colorado, but I think now even more with what this offseason has been.
But the whole enterprise, and I want the player liberation. I want the player freedom. I want them paid. I don't want any guardrails. I hear people, we got to have guardrails. Well, that's not liberation and freedom.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, then you have guardrails, you're kind of back to thinking you own them again. I don't want that.
No.
I'm fine with it.
Sure.
But they have to understand, with this, we lose the old mindset of, like, you know, that's somebody's 19-year-old baby. Sure. That's somebody's 20-year-old. You want to act grown, you're going to get treated grown.
Definitely. And so it's become a weird storyline.
Yeah,
kind of one that I didn't expect. Like, if you had asked me when the week started, like, hey, what's going to happen this week in the sports world? I would not have said, like, Shedeur Sanders and Deion Sanders getting into it on social media with former players of Colorado. But,
yeah,
like,
it's,
you know,
it's been a lot, man, though. Like,
it has.
Yeah, Kamani, I know, Brian, you've been following a lot.
Kamani
McClain, he's been talking.
He's been talking
down on Colorado.
That was kind of before all this has happened.
And that was just like the
if you
the
get
rock.
It, you got to be able to.
Now everybody throwing rocks at him.
Absolutely.
So it's just like it's just coming down on Colorado.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting and, you know, going to build up for a big season for Colorado with a lot of eyes on them. But I would tell everybody, go read that story in The Athletic. It's very interesting. Kind of gives you that other side of it because we all saw very publicly what happened with Colorado football when Deion got there. But we didn't, you know, you didn't really know what happened to those players that were let go. But let's go ahead and get to a break. And when we come back, it'll be time for Big Number of the Day.
Join the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin, for Wolo and Friends. Weekday mornings from 10 to 11 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Big Daddy.
Hello, Big Brand.
It's a guy, he wants to be big, then he gets big, he doesn't want to be big anymore, then he gets small, but the suit's too big.
Big Daddy.
The big boy.
You're a big guy.
I think she's trying to pull a fast one on Big Daddy.
The big number of the day.
Well, my big number today is a basketball number, as I think a lot of eyes are on the NBA playoffs right now. So my big number is the number 14. Jalen Brunson currently leads the league with 34.4 points per game throughout the postseason. There are 14 players, including Jalen Brunson, that are averaging more than 25 points per game in the first round of this year's playoffs. So 14 averaging more than 25 points. We've talked about a lot of those guys. Luka's in that conversation. We talked about Derek White earlier. He's in that conversation. He's only averaging 22 points. But there's plenty of guys there or around there. But 14 with more than 25 points per game. That number would tie for the most such players in a single round in NBA history with the first round in 1989. So you got to go back a long time since there were 14 players averaging 25 or more points in a round of the playoffs.
89 was back when we thought we were playing a lot of defense, too.
That's right. So that's
clothesline people.
Yeah, sure.
That's bad boy Pistons.
Right.
And
yeah.
Okay. My big number, we just were talking a little bit of college football. I got a big number from college football for you. The number is 10. Only 10 FBS programs have posted 10 straight winning seasons. That's from 14 through last year through 2023. Alphabetically, here you go.
Okay.
Alabama, Boise State, Clemson, Georgia, Iowa. There's Iowa again.
Oh, there they are.
Memphis.
How about that?
There's the Memphis Tigers again. Ohio State, Oklahoma State, Utah, and Wisconsin. There's Wisconsin again.
Sure,
they're always kind of in these lists. 10 straight winning seasons for Tiger football.
Really impressive.
Over three coaches.
Yeah. That's the even more impressive part about it.
Very impressive.
It's hard to get those coaching hires right.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Do we really realize this around here?
I don't think so.
Are we talking about Joey Brackett's May 2nd bracket?
Brett, too much. May 2nd. I mean, playing the 8-9 game, Brett, against Pitt. How about that?
I mean, what are we doing? We've got proven success in football.
After so many years
of we got to go over
struggling.
And chase it over here.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I don't know why there isn't more rallying around. I mean, most of my childhood was watching teams that just weren't good and a program that was just not good at all.
And you then, still loved them.
And I still loved them. And now,
what a great guy, Brian.
You see
dedication.
This turnaround and this built success. I mean, you would think that there would
well,
be so much
that was
so
for where he slept and what he wanted to eat.
That's true. I was forced into it, Johnny. No, I'm kidding. But it's a good question because I do think there should be more support. And you're right. On May 2nd, we should be talking about the football team and what the football team could succeed and get to this year instead of, oh, Joe Brackett's is Joey B. Got him as an 8 seed.
Larry Finch is 6th year. He went to the Elite Eight. Mm. John Calipari, 6th year. He went to the Elite Eight. Mm. After 6 years of Penny Hardaway, it hadn't been allowed foul.
Mm-mm. No.
And we got Ryan Silverfield doing what he's doing, yep. and we're talking Joe Brackett's.
Joey B. Yeah, it doesn't seem like it should be lining up together.
And I think the conversation around that, as I said the other day, you're putting undue pressure on Penny Hardaway for next year.
Certainly.
Now he can't control what Joe Lunardi writes.
Right.
But locally, sure. We can.
Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. And again, you know,
show me a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, and you still.
Football has shown us.
It has. And maybe I
proven
would,
success.
Maybe I would feel a little different if, like, the entire roster was put together and we knew what this team would look like. We don't even know what the team's going to look like.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only half
great
the roster
point, Brad.
Put together right now.
Right.
So it's still just a lot of kind of up in the air.
And by his own words, he wanted it put together where everybody's good to go by June, right?
And yeah, and we're getting kind of
close to
that.
That's kind of when second session,
sure.
or first session of summer
sure.
school really
sure.
gets rolling, right after Memorial Day.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's what he said. He said by June, he wants to have his you, most, if not all, of his team there.
You guys help me with something, because this was not an option. back in the day when I
sure.
went to school in a one-room schoolhouse, and intercession, you know what I'm talking about?
Sure, yeah.
Did you have them at the University of Memphis?
I don't know if they had them or not at the University. I never took an intercession.
No, I never took one.
Do they offer them before? Do they? I know they offer them in January.
Sure.
And boy, it's packed everywhere in those.
Oh yeah,
and it's very intense. I mean, you're getting a semester in about 3 weeks,
sure.
aren't you?
Yeah.
Yes. I know for summer classes when I took summer classes, it was kind of like
kinda
that.
Like
it,
that.
It, and it was you got to learn it quick, or you quickly fall behind.
Yeah.
Well, summer school used to be very much like that, and it was good for me because it was every day.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah,
I couldn't get behind.
Sure, yeah, because you're constantly working on stuff. It's not like, hey, you know, this is due later
and we're not
doing anything today.
This is due tomorrow.
I was really on the ball, too.
By
that point.
That helps, I guess, you know, when you really got some willpower behind it, and you, I got to get this, that definitely helps, but... I don't know. I'm with you. I think that number might shock some people when you put the Tigers in that same category of Alabama.
I think it shocks a lot of our people,
sure.
our listeners.
No, that's what I'm saying.
I'm baffled
by it. I think people here in Memphis are would be surprised by it because I just, you know, I don't think it's talked about enough with where the success has been. Well, let's wrap up our second hour and get to a break. When we come back to start our third and final hour, we'll talk more Tigers athletics, a little football talk, a little basketball talk with our friend Greg Gaston. That's next.